Welcome, Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host for a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce the crew. Guys, if you don't mind waiting for the video portion of our show, we've got Chief Ralph Ornelas now, formerly with L.A. County. No, not the PD, not the LAPD. No. L.A. County Sheriff's Office. Very important that I highlight that distinction just to keep Ralph's blood pressure down. And then he went on to become a police chief, though. I've never asked him whether he would rather work for a PD or an SO, but he does wear both hats. So thanks for being, that's a good question. We should ask him that one day. So thanks for being on the show, Chief Ralph. Also, Dan O'Kelly with GunLearn at GunLearn.com, one of our sponsors as well, former ATF. And yeah, this is going to be a gun show, guys. So yeah, so stay tuned. These are always some of our most popular shows, and we've got the source with us. A shout out to our title sponsor, Gulls at Gulls.com. Don't forget that 15% discount code. It's Radio15. Type it in at Gulls.com to get 15% off of your next purchase. Also, ComplianTechnologies.com, our satellite sponsor. And yes, we were formerly with Westwood One. We're trying to make the transition to Sirius XM satellite radio, so stay tuned for that. We have GunLearn.com, and that is Dan O'Kelly's company, MyMedicare.live. SafeguardRecruiting.com, our streaming sponsor. We're streaming to about 1 million followers right now during the live show. And then TwoBells.com, they built a new online store at LegalRoundtable.com. Also, a shout out to all the guys that are helping make this show happen. Brian Burns with Tampa Free Press, they're carrying our content. Also, Reed Dietrich, former lawman.com. We've got Travis Shates with LawOfficer.com. Thanks to all those entities for helping make this show happen. And hey, we're on a ton of outlets. For example, podcast, Spotify, Apple iTunes, and we're on social media, Rumble, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Truth Social. If you go to leoroundtable.com, the top menu bar has all the outlets that we're at, the dates, the times we appear on radio stations. We're on 47 radio stations nationally syndicated around the country. We got a lot going on, so check it out. Now, what in the world are we talking about? I already hinted that it's going to be a gun show. So we've got the United States Postal Service weighs scrapping a century-old ban on shipping handguns. And then somewhat related to that, ATF flips the script. So we've got, we're talking about the Second Amendment Foundation. They begin a deep dive in the 21 massive rule changes. We'll be talking about those. We got Trump admin. They axe a major Biden-era gun restriction and sweeping ATF overhaul. And we've also got gun rights groups. They challenge California open carry ban in the Ninth Circuit. The Ninth Circuit has been presenting some surprises lately, guys. So don't think that they're necessarily as liberal and woke as you used to. Florida AG sues Jacksonville. Yeah, Jacksonville, north of where I'm at, over a secret gun log. Are you kidding me? In Florida? And then we've got a story. Decided to shoot him over and over. An off-duty security guard stands over a teen who was returning a BB gun at a sporting goods store and executes him. They may have gotten a little carried away with the title there, but we'll talk about that if we have time. Also, deputy justified in the fatal shooting of a suspect when he reaches for a gun in his waistband. We'll definitely need to talk about it. And then no charges for a Gastonia police officer who shot and killed an armed man at a convenience store. So that's what we have. But these gun articles are going to take some time. So we'll cover the other stuff as we have time. So the first story, if you gentlemen don't mind, I'm going to throw in the first two together. So we're going to cover one and four, but the United States Postal Service, they've officially reached the end of its public comment period regarding a major policy shift, and they are looking at allowing private citizens to mail firearms. Yeah, through the U.S. Postal Service, right? Usually a taboo, right? The move, it would require overturning a present ban spanning nearly a century. It follows a legal memo from the Justice Department questioning the constitutionality of the current mailing restrictions. Now, this has been going on since 1927. Congress prohibited the mailing of what they call concealable firearms like pistols, revolvers, and stuff through the federal postal system. The Department of Justice's Office of Legal Counsel, they issued a memo in April suggesting that this longstanding rule that it actually is not in line with the current judicial precedents. And it also says that the memo specifically pointed to the Supreme Court's 2022 ruling in New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin. So we all know the Bruin decision has set a higher bar for government that justify firearm restrictions. And according to the DOJ memo, the current ban on mailing handguns, it creates significant barriers for citizens that are trying to exercise their Second Amendment rights. The document argues that the law makes it unnecessarily difficult for people to travel with firearms for lawful activities like hunting, target shooting, or even for self-defense. And here's a quote saying, "We conclude that the restriction imposed by Section 1715, that it violates the Second Amendment." And the legal experts further noted that the 1927 statute Remember back when they, you know, instituted that, it interferes with the, quote, incidental rights to acquire and maintain arms, unquote. And they also claim that there's no historical history on doing that. It kind of goes on and on about this. They're talking about the opposition because, of course, we have Democratic officials and gun control advocacy groups. They're arguing that easing the mailing restrictions could lead to safety concerns to complicate the tracking of weapon transfers, which, you know, I'm sure that they're all over, you know, into. And just the companion article, the other one that I just wanted to mention is that also at Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com, while this is going on, ATF is flipping the script and it says they're looking at about 21 massive rule changes. So ATF, they're talking about proposed rule changes for the Federal Register. The Second Amendment Foundation, again, is involved in this in Bellevue, Washington. They've launched an immediate review of the package to determine how these regulatory pivots will affect millions of American gun owners and industry stakeholders, actually. They say the rollout follows a joint announcement made by the acting attorney general, Todd Blanche, who a lot of people are loving right now, and also the ATF director, Robert Cicada, I believe is how you pronounce his name. The updates cover a broad spectrum of federal oversight, including the legal definition of being engaged in the business of selling firearms, how long records have to be retained by these guys, specific clarifications regarding the interstate transportation of weapons under the Gun Control Act. And then they're talking about FFLs, record keeping mandates, all that kind of stuff. So that said, Dan O'Kelly, you want to start us off on this stuff? I know Ralph's pointing to you too. So we're hoping to get Dan O'Kelly started on this. So go ahead, Dan.
Sure. I mean, where do we start? As far as mailing handguns, we need to clarify a little bit. It's okay, for instance, to mail a long gun, right? So pick some high-capacity rifle that everybody's up in arms about that's anti-gun. The AR-15, the AK-47. You can send one of those through U.S. mail, but you can't send a two-shot Derringer through the mail. Now, we're only talking about the U.S. mail. It's okay to send either through FedEx, UPS, any of these, you know, shipping companies. We're only talking about the U.S. Post Office. Now, on top of that, you can only send a gun from one state to another if you're sending it to a licensed gun dealer or gun manufacturer. You know, you can't mail or ship one of these to your buddy or what have you without violating federal law. So there's a lot of hype involved in this law, and I'll leave it at that for now, and we can touch on the next aspect of everything you covered.
You know, I Dan, thank you so much for your articulation of that, because I was concerned with the fact that if I, you know, I send a gun to New York from California and stuff like that to Jimmy Jones, you know, and I'm concerned about, and you can educate me on this in the audience, I'm concerned about, you know, somebody get that gun in the wrong hands while it's being mailed from Ralph Ornelas to Jimmy Jones in New York City. And I like what you said, because you educated me on some of those key points. And I'm looking forward even to hearing more from you, because I'll never portray myself as an expert about weaponry, but you are. And I'm looking forward to some of the other details or explanations, some of the other articles. Thank you so much on that.
Sure, Ralph. Yeah, I mean, if you have a, let's say you have a broken gun and it was made by, you know, Acme, just, I don't want to name any specific gun company, so I'll make one up. I'll use the one that Wile E. Coyote uses, right?
Let's just say it's an Acme 320. How's that?
Right, okay, an Acme 320 and it broke. You can send it directly from your home, you know, through FedEx or whomever to Acme. You don't have to take it to a dealer and have them ship it to Acme. A lot of people think you do. And once they fix it, Acme can send it right back to your home, because, you know, that's the situation from you to them and back. You can't go through some other person and have them send it to them or whatever. You can't have them send it back to a different location. So there's that. You know, we need to be clear on some of the aspects of what we're talking about.
Anything's going on with FFLs that we should talk about real quick before we move on to the other ones, Dan?
That's a pretty broad topic.
Well, I mean, you know, there is a, I mean, look, it's common. Look, we all know cops that have had their FFLs, but I know cops in some states where it's been very, very difficult to have an FFL, and they're either taxing you or making regulations that have been making it almost impossible to do your job. I mean, you're having to like put iron doors on every entrance and cameras everywhere and inside, outside. I mean, just all kind. And then the regulatory stuff too.
There's a federal law in the Gun Control Act that says that if a federal firearms dealer, a federal firearms licensee, FFL, violates a state or local law, he is violating this federal law by violating that state or local law. So ATF is bound by that. If you apply to get an FFL or you are an FFL and they find you violating some state or local thing, and it can be zoning. You know, if you apply to become a licensed dealer, that one of the things they check is if you're going to run this out of your home, is your home in an area that's zoned for business? If it's not, they turn you down for that reason. If the locals are anti-gun, you know, if you live in a place that doesn't like guns, we'll just leave it at that, they can instill all of these rules. You know, to your point, you have to have an alarm, you have to have iron doors, you have to have this, that, and the other, to where you can't comply federally and you can't get a license.
Well, perfect timing, Dan. We're up for our first commercial break, guys. We've got a lot more stuff that we're going to be talking about, especially firearm stuff. Stay tuned. Commercial break. We'll be right back.
My family only cares about one thing, that I come home safe.
At Gall's, every order begins with a promise. Made with purpose. Stitched for support. Backed with pride. Answered by dedicated hands. Delivering the standard you have sworn to uphold. We serve more than the mission. We serve the person. Each piece is engineered to help get our first responders through the shift and back home safe.
Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by Chief Ralph Ornelas from California. We've also got Dan O'Kelly, former ATF, and he is in the sunny state of Florida. That's right. Not too far from me. So thanks for being on the show, gentlemen. You know, we have been talking about guns, firearms, some ATF changes and stuff like that. We've got some other gun articles that are coming up as well. Dan, is there anything that you wanted to add before we move on to the to Trump axing? No, the Biden era gun restrictions?
No, let's get into the next one.
All right, next one. And look, I think most of these are all from the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com, Brian Burns publication. But the Trump admin, they're axing major Biden-era gun restrictions in a sweeping ATF overhaul. Now, I believe what I'm saying from this article is relatively short, but the Trump admin, they moved to dismantle several high-profile firearm regulations, marking a significant shift in federal gun policy, because we're talking, you know, we're not even talking about Trump 1.0. We're talking, you know, 4 years of Biden. And now, of course, Trump just in the first year. Oh, my gosh. You know, it's hard to keep up. Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche announced that that ATF will publish at least 34 rule changes, effectively rolling back restrictions established during the Biden presidency. And it goes on to say that central to the announcement, it's the repeal of what they call the stabilization brace rule and the engaged in business regulation. Now, the former had reclassified pistols that were equipped. They had stabilized braces on them. They considered them to be short barreled rifles, and owners had to register them, and they had to pay. There was a tax, $200. They had to or destroy certain components. Now, the latter, introduced in April of 2024, so about 2 years ago, that required more private sellers to obtain federal firearms license. So private sellers in that instance, according to the article, had to become FFLs through a federal judge that previously blocked its enforcement. So that's where we're at on that. Dan O'Kelly.
This thing about braces. Even if they take this rule and throw it in the trash, the fact remains that the definition of, now don't everybody kill me when I say this, hear me out. the definition of a rifle says any firearm designed to be fired from the shoulder and having less than 16 inch, less than 26 overall length is a short barreled rifle. So if you use a brace against your shoulder, you have redesigned it. That's ATF's argument, right or wrong. And here's the thing. Since January 1st, there is no more tax on registering a short-barreled rifle. So fill out a form, send it in. Everybody's, I mean, ATF can't even keep up with the number of registrations since January. You know, the gun public is registering everything, and that's great. But once you register your AR pistol, your AK pistol, then you don't even have to fool around with a brace. Put a real stock on it and have an SBR. You didn't have to pay any money to do it. Here's something that most people don't think about. When we have an anti-gun administration that goes after, quote, assault weapons or semi-automatics, have you ever seen them go after registered NFA firearms, i.e. machine guns, short-barreled rifles? No. So if you register your firearms as NFA, they're pretty much in a protected class in the future, even if you get an anti-gun administration. Just something to think about. Anyway, that's just about braces.
Well, I got to say, you know, I'm sitting back here and I'm getting an education here, you know, so I'm glad you're not charging me over the screen right now, Ken.
Oh, Hill.
I mean, Dan.
These are billable hours.
I know.
I can't afford to have him on the show too often because I can't afford it. Yeah.
But it's great. It's great. No, I'm not trying I'm not trying to just
like you smoke. Pay me to be on the show. Come on.
You know, I'm not trying to blow smoke at you. I mean, really, some of the things I've never even thought about because I'm not an expert in that. So thanks for clarification about the stabilizer and how you should register it, you know. So
I plan to register a half dozen of my guns because then I can put short barrels on them. I can put shoulder stocks on my pistols. I mean, why not?
Hey, the engaged in business regulation, anything on that, Dan?
Another good one on that. I mean, up until the Biden administration, federal law says that you are allowed as a private individual to make occasional sales to enhance your collection. It doesn't say what occasional is. So at different times, during different years, what I mean by times, I've seen administrations say, well, you know, if you're selling one a month, then you're engaged in the business. And the definition of engaged is in the business is, you know, you're selling guns for livelihood and profit. Well, obviously, if you sell something, you're going to make a profit. Who's going to sell it at a loss, right? There wouldn't be any stores if you didn't make a profit. So they use that against you, and it's only natural that you expect somebody to make a profit because prices go up. So generally, if you keep something for a long enough time, it's going to be worth more when you sell it. But during the Biden administration, they came up with this, well, if you sell one gun, you're engaged in the business and you don't have a license, you're busted for dealing without a license, which was ridiculous because it went, you know, it flew in the face of you're allowed to enhance your collection and make occasional sales. The problem is legislators, when they write these federal gun laws, they'll use a term like occasional, but then they don't define it. What is occasional? And so ATF gets to use that to their advantage when they prosecute somebody and say, well, this month, you know, once is occasional. And last year, five times in 6 months was occasional. So what does it mean?
Good point. All right. I love it.
You know, I like what you said there. And here you are part of ATF for a long period of time. And what you stated there is ATF is using some of these, you know, policies to go after some people. Maybe, and I'm not putting words in your mouth, Dan, maybe inappropriately, that going after some of the people that, you know, had occasional sales, you know. So, you know, I thank you for speaking so forthright. Thank you so much.
So my next question was going to ask Ralph how often he sells firearms, and they give his home address and what state and locale he lives in for the jurisdiction for the authority. So I'm joking with you, Ralph.
You know, no. there are obviously people out there that are trafficking firearms, you know, and when they're doing that, the undercover people who buy guns from them, you know, get admissions from these people that, you know, they're building and selling. They don't care who they sell to. They right. tell you how often they sell. Right. You know, there are gun traffickers out there, and that's illegal. We're talking about them.
12 seconds out, so I just see this. Sorry for the late notice. Commercial break. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com, and they are committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-optics manner, utilizing what they're called their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Device Technology. Now, their flagship product, we all know by now it's called the Glove. It's not only helped officers tens of thousands of times, but they've actually had over 250,000 deployments. And guess what? No injuries, no deaths. They've actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or a conductive energy weapon, the Glove at ComplianTechnologies.com, they have virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions that's ever come along. Go to ComplianTechnologies.com today. Tell them the chip sent you. Again, ComplianTechnologies.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by Chief Ralph Ornelas from California. We've got former ATF Dan O'Kelly somewhere in the Sunshine State. And we're talking guns, guys. And look, here we go. We got our next one here. And this is also from Tampa Free Press at TampaFB.com. This is going to be maybe a little controversial. We have gun rights groups. They were challenging California's open carry ban in the Ninth Circuit. So we're back in the Ninth Circuit. A coalition of major firearms advocacy organizations, they filed a legal brief urging the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit. Remember, they've had some really surprising decisions coming out of the Ninth Circuit lately, and they want them to strike down California's restrictions on open carry of firearms. California doesn't want you to do that. They do. The Second Amendment Foundation and the California Rifle and Pistol Association and several other groups, they submitted the Friend of the Court brief in the case of Baird versus Bonta. And we talked about this before, but the groups argue that the plain text of the Second Amendment and the centuries of American history, that they actually, those facts protect the right of people to open carry in public in the United States. The brief focuses heavily on the Bruin test, but we already mentioned again today, the legal standard established by the Supreme Court back in 2022. And the standard requires the government to prove that any gun regulation is consistent with the nation's historical tradition of firearm regulation. So again, in short, these groups coming together, filing a friend of the court brief, and they're trying to prevent California from restricting people from open carrying. Ralph, you want to start us off on this one?
Yeah, you know, I liked it, what they did.
And you're in California, just to remind our audience that you're in, was it?
Huntington Beach, California. You know, and I like it because, listen, you know, all of us on the screen here, the audience, know that when you have people that legally and train properly about open carry, it does prevent crime. And guess what? Working the streets of L.A., you know, when the gang members have weapons and, you know, people don't have weapons, good, legitimate people who are doing the right thing day in and day out, you know, guess what? You know, they're put at risk, you know, good citizens. I'll give you an example of this, though, too, Dan and Chip. We had a ARCO gas station. A gentleman owned this ARCO gas station. He had right to have a weapon in his shop, in his ARCO gas station. Do you know the couple of shootings that I handled him? He killed a robber, right? After that, I cannot tell you, all my years working, I've never had a problem again. These robbers came in and he
had that business.
Yeah. And guess what? Never had a problem anymore. And so, you know, that's where I look at open carry, legitimate people train on weapons, how to handle appropriately. You know, it does have impact. So I'm for it.
Let me throw something. I know Dan unmuted and muted, but you said training, but open carry has no training standard. So are you saying that you only are for open carry if the people training it or people doing the open carry are trained? Or what exactly you're saying? Because that's not part of open carry, typically.
No, you know, I'm going to be very blunt and maybe not like it, some people. I like to see them have training about the weapon.
So you're not for open carry then? Because currently, Open carry is open carry because it's a constitutional entitlement. But what you're saying is that you're only for open carry if it requires people to get training first.
I would hope they would have some training. Yes, I do.
All right. Okay.
That's my opinion.
All right, but it's a good clarification. Yeah.
But those are two different issues. If I can interject, I lived in Texas when they allowed open carry in 2016. And as it was coming up, you know, it's already been approved, but it doesn't take effect yet. And oh my goodness, so many people are just panicky about it at that time. 2015, late 2015, oh, it's going to be 30 days and everybody's going to be walking around with a hog leg on their leg. You know, everybody's going to have a gun. For the rest of the time I lived in Texas, which was three more years after that took effect, I saw one man one time with a visible handgun on his belt. One time. Florida began open carry, I don't know, how many months ago was it? Was it the beginning of the year? I forget. 6 months? I'll have to say
no, four I think to
six
it was,
months ago.
Yeah, it's been, we got a little time under our belt now with the open carry, but I
okay, I but have you seen anyone with a pistol visible?
Only in a really small town. Other than that, no, I have not.
I mean, it, you can see it eventually. You'll see it occasionally. I have yet to see one. Yeah. So people don't do it. You can, but you don't see it. It doesn't happen. You don't have people walking around, you know, with pistols on their side, because anybody with common sense realizes if you can carry it openly, you can carry it concealed. That's generally what those laws include, unless they wrote it up a different way. But why would you show your cards? I mean, when you play poker, do you go, hey, here are the cards I have, two kings and a six? No, you keep that hidden. And then if something starts, hey, I have a solution for this. But if you have your gun visible and you're sitting in a restaurant, a bank, I don't care what it is, and some robber happens to be in there, he's going to go, well, I know who the first person is I'm going to shoot before I make my play. You know, you're crazy if you let your gun be shown. The best benefit of open carry is when you're in a state that doesn't have it but does allow concealed carry. If the wind, you know, you bend over, if all of a sudden your gun prints or your shirt blows open, now you get busted. You get thrown in jail because, you displayed your firearm. That's all open carry really does, is prevent an arrest for inadvertent display.
Yeah. So, and thanks for breaking that down. I mean, that would be even a number two, you know, can understand that. That was very well defined. So I feel a lot like Ralph. What bothers me is people carrying guns that don't have training. But I respect the Constitution. If Brett was on the show, he would tell you that we have a constitutional right to carry firearms. Doesn't matter, train, not train, whatever. And I'll leave it to the scholars that are more educated than me in constitutional law. But I would hope, like Ralph, that everybody that carries has some training. We have a story about a security guard that ended up shooting a kid with returning a BB gun to a store. I haven't seen a video of that. You know what? I have a fear that being an ex-cop carrying a gun under LEOSA, that if I have to take action somewhere, I'm going to have some yahoo that has no training, and he's going to see me with a gun trying to take out a bad guy, and he's going to take me out. And that is my fear. But I understand that the constitutional law can trump my concern, and I think there's a necessity for training, but I can't say that trumps what the Constitution allows. So that's just.
I really like the examples you gave, Dan. It really clarified some issues for me also. So, but I do believe in training for people who go into have, and I like to speak to that one article you brought about that security laws, because, you know,
well, let's wait until we cover it.
No, I know. I said, I hope we are.
I can go out on a limb and say every police officer would agree that having a gun can be your greatest asset, or it can be your worst liability. You know, if somebody takes it away from you now, oh, I wish I hadn't even brought one, right? Because now they wouldn't have one that they're using against me. So having a gun can be great or not great. And it can come down to your training. You know, so in the case of a police officer, have you been taught any weapon retention? Somebody tries to take it away from you. Can you put them on their face? or are they just going to take your gun and kill you with it? So that, I think, is the best way to clarify why I agree with Ralph that you should have some training. You know, let's say they make driver's licenses some, you know, where it's not a privilege anymore, where it's a guaranteed thing.
Yeah.
How about the people who, okay, here's your driver's license, and now here they go down the street. Never had driver's ed, don't know a thing about how to use a car, what the traffic laws are. What can go wrong, right?
Hey. We've seen examples of that.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, it's the same thing. There are some rules that if you want to keep from hurting yourself or some innocent person, you need to know what you're doing with a gun, like it or not.
Correct.
Well, guys, real quick, Jacksonville, Florida, Tampa Free Press at tampafp.com. Florida AG sues Jacksonville over secret gun logs. So we got the Attorney General in Florida, James Uthmeyer. He files a lawsuit against the city of Jacksonville. He did this on Tuesday, alleging that the local government maintained an illegal registry of firearms that were brought into a public buildings. This just blew my mind. The legal action follows a two-month probe. Reports that security personnel at two city-owned locations recorded the personal details and firearm serial numbers. They actually recorded the serial numbers of the firearms of armed visitors over a two-year period. You've got to be kidding me. Under Florida law, of course, government entities are strictly prohibited from creating or maintaining a list of privately owned firearms. There's even some national stuff about that. The controversy surfaced in 2025 when two binders containing the logs were discovered, and the mayor's office is denying any knowledge of it. Uthmeyer, you know, the AG, is saying, look, even though they refused to prosecute these guys in the past, now he wants $5 million in damages, which is, of course, the maximum penalty allowed by law, along with additional court-ordered relief. The mayor is Donna Deegan saying that, hey, we deny involvement, and they're saying that they were unaware of it. So I'm just kind of setting the story up because we're getting ready to go for a commercial break, guys. Stick with us. We'll talk about this when we get back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about one of my favorites. Of course, the pressure's on because he's on my show. It's GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And, you know, there's some new deals, new stuff going on with GunLearn, so pay attention. You know, GunLearn is the first and the only company that offer a step-by-step program that takes you from your present knowledge level to become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearms specialist. Now, notice I said certified firearm specialist. They've got a new deal going on. They partnered with Smarter Degree and their university partners, and now that degree, it's worth college credits, even if you got it up to 5 years ago. So you can become a certified firearm specialist now and also have college credits. And of course, they've been doing this way back since 1996. They've been teaching everything that LEOs, which is law enforcement officers, need to know about firearms and ammunition to all facets of law enforcement. You can start the day with online training, or you can sign up to attend a live seminar. And if you have your own agency, if you're a chief or a sheriff, you can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. It's an amazing opportunity. Go to gunlearn.com to get more information. Hook up with Dan O'Kelly, the founder, or again, gunlearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by Chief Ralph Ornelas from California, and we've got former ATF Dan O'Kelly in the state of Florida. We've been talking about, just before the commercial break, I went over the Florida AG, and that is James Uthmeyer. He's suing the Jacksonville, City Jacksonville, and of course, we got the mayor there as well, over secret gun logs. They were recording guns and serial numbers and who's carrying them for a two-year period. They had two journals, and it was going on in two different buildings. Crazy. Dan O'Kelly.
Well, I have to give major props to the Attorney General for putting an end to this. I'm not trying to hurt the city of Jacksonville, but if it's already a state law, why did the city, why did the mayor, why did whoever the powers that be there not know about it? I mean, did they willfully violate state law? This mirrors the Firearm Owners Protection Act of 1986, which is a federal rewrite of the Gun Control Act. And in the FOPA, it says that the federal government cannot maintain any kind of a federal gun registry. You know, I've given props to ATF in the past because I know in past years, for instance, the city of Chicago has sued ATF saying, hey, we want those records. We want to know from your tracing database who in the city of Chicago has a firearm so we can take action against them or whatever they were going to do with it. And ATF, to their credit, fought that, refused to give that information, and never did. You know, and they did that with other jurisdictions also. So,
you know, I got a question: what was that city doing with that registry, that list? What's the purpose? What was the goal that they were doing that? I mean, that's always my concern. What is the goal of that, or their mission?
Yeah, good question.
Yeah, they're saying it was one individual, I believe it was a female, that took it upon herself to do, but there were two different buildings and two different logs. Yeah, there is no way that went on for 2 years without people knowing about it.
So, you know, I could surmise that they may have in good faith thought, well, hey, when you get a police call to a certain address, we can query this database real quick and say, hey, are there guns in this house? So that when the officers show up, you know, what are you walking into? Well, hey, the guy owns three AK-47, something like that. You know, there may have been, give them the benefit of the doubt, maybe there was a good faith reason for this, but still, I'm glad the state law exists, and I'm glad that the AG is taking action to stop it, because it's just an avenue for future seizures.
So you give an interesting example of that, but how do they get that information from the city hall or the city buildings to the police department? And I would love to do a little bit of an inquiry to find out if that really transpired, because, you know, and I know, Chip, you get calls for serving Ralph Fornelis's house and previous that maybe they found as a weapon that goes into a call history about Ralph Fornelis's home. So the next time they go out there, that's in the call. For a future call. So, you know, that's an interesting example you give, Dan, but I wonder if they ever did share some of that information.
Well, guys, we got 6 minutes and I got two stories to cover. So let's roll with this. Newsbreak.com decided to shoot him over and over. Off-duty security guard stands over teen who was returning a BB gun at a sporting goods store and executes him. So look, the new source, it's called Newsbreak. So this is going to be slanted. I have to accept that up front. You can tell right from the title. But let's talk about this. And I want to do this quickly. I'm hoping we get to a story with a video component. Washington State man headed to prison for decades after he shoots and kills a 17-year-old boy he claimed was armed and about to commit a robbery. But this guy was actually returning a BB gun to a sporting goods store. So Aaron Brown Myers, he's 52 years old. He was convicted on Friday of second-degree murder and assault in the shooting death of a 17-year-old Hazrat Al-Rani outside the Big Five sporting goods store in Renton, which is a Seattle suburb. Now, Myers faces just over 20 to 28 years in jail for murder, plus another 10 years for firearm enhancements, according to the King County Prosecutor's Office. So he's looking at, close to 38 years. The defendant is an off-duty security guard, was in his car waiting for his son to finish his martial arts class. He sees this guy, this 17-year-old, and two other teenagers carrying what he believed to be a Glock handgun, according to the probable cause affidavit obtained by the Associated Press. Myers believed the teens were going to go in the store and they were going to rob it. In reality, prosecutors say that they were actually returning a malfunctioning BB gun. Now, our security guard's armed with a real Glock. He runs up to the teenagers, holds him at gunpoint. The King County prosecutor, Elaine Lee, said the boys repeatedly told him that it's a BB gun, it's not real. Myers ignored the police. I don't see any huge, alarms yet. As he holds them at gunpoint, the 17-year-old that ended up getting shot, he went by Ali, he drops the fake gun and he holds up his hands. And they say that when he turned the walk away, that the security guard decided to shoot him once, twice, over and over, continuing as the kid falls to his knees and his hands. And then they continue to shoot him while he was face down on the ground. Now, look, there's not a video of this. This is what they're saying. In all, it says that the security guard fired 7 shots, 6 of which hit the kid in the back. And the defense attorney reportedly told jurors that Myers needed to act based on what he saw. And the attorney also noted that the BB gun looked real and that the security guard didn't want anybody to get hurt. And he's going to be sentenced July 21st. Chief Ralph.
You know, first of all, being a staff instructor at the academy, that I would always teach my recruits and even senior officers, when you're off duty and you can become a really good witness, unless your life or your family's life is in danger. And I look at this, there's a security guard, not a police officer. He's off duty. I got to be honest with you. He stepped into a very difficult situation where he put himself in an arena that he should have never put himself in. If he believes there's a potential of some nefarious action, criminal robbery or something, be a good witness, call 911, give a good description. I'll tell you something. I had a recruit of mine who did something like this after he graduated with his child in a parking lot, took action, and guess what? A round skipped off the ground, hit the child, and killed his child. And I want to tell you something. That's why I always preach. If you could be a great witness, be that great witness to the police department. Use the 911 system. Give good descriptions with the count. So you know something? It saddens me for the security guard, but I believe he put himself in an arena he should have never put himself in.
Yeah. Dan?
I agree. He, you know, he may have had a desire to be a hero, you know, be the guy that saves the day rather than let somebody else take the glory. But, you know, he probably was well-based in assuming this was a real weapon. I mean, who's going to walk in with a BB gun when they could walk in with a real weapon? Very stupid on the kid's part. You're going to leave this thing visible. Don't put it in a paper bag or something. You're going to walk in a store with what looks like a gun. That's the purpose of airsofts and things like that. The reason they're so popular is because they're exactingly authentic. They look like the real thing, although there's no lethality, no legalities. But then, yeah, I don't get the whole, the kid drops it, puts his hands up, and the guy still shoots him repeatedly. That's either the worst security guard, if not the worst. I just don't have any more words for that. What possesses you to murder somebody in cold blood after they've dropped it and put their hands up and you're in control of the situation?
Yeah, like I have to bring up the news source again, because I really, when I have such a liberal, woke news source, and I'm talking about what Newsbreak, even in the title, how heavily it was slanted, I don't necessarily believe every, you know, everything that they say went down. I mean, look, it could have been that the kid was, you know, the security guard not knowing what the laws are because he's a security guard, not a cop, and thinking that, hey, I prevented an armed robbery. Now I got my armed robbery, or, you know, my attempted armed robbery suspect. Maybe he's thinking it was, you know, he's got attempted armed robbery charges on this guy, and now the kid wants to leave after he drops his gun. Maybe he's thinking he has the right to use lethal. I mean, I don't know. I guess that could be. I really question. It's just not a good bona fide. So I wish I had more information. I wish I had a video or more information on this. I wish I had more information about the defense, you know, for the security guard. But I agree. Every time, guys, whether you're, and this is, look, this is great to talk about on the show, because we've got a lot of retired cops like me or off duty cops, and you see crap. You've always got to run scenarios, you know, through your head, because you, like Ralph said, you never know. You could be that cop that gets out of the academy. You got your family with you. You know, there's trade-offs, guys. And I didn't know. I didn't ask where the bullet came from, whether it was from the cop or from the bad guy that killed the son. That would be horrible if it was your own. But yet you never know. So run the scenarios through your brain. Think about the possible consequences. And, you know, you never really know, like the story that MBS told on Rumble about the cop that shoots the citizen that has somebody at gunpoint, you know. Gosh, you know, you don't want that. You don't want to be that guy. Hey, we're running out of time. Dan O'Kelly and Chief Ralph Ornelas, thank you guys so much for being on the show and for talking about all the stuff and for breaking it down for us dummies. Appreciate that. Want to mention the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. Lieutenant Randy Sutton's 501c3, helping cops out in a world of hurt. And also, I want to mention our sponsors, guys. Title sponsor, Gauls.com. Don't forget that discount code. It's Radio15. ComplyTechnologies.com, GunLearn.com, Medicare.life, Safeguard Recruiting, and TwoBells.com. And don't forget, you can become a certified firearm specialist through GunLearn.com, the University Partners Program. Get college degrees or college credits. Guys, we'll see you back tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern.